The fall of 2003 in New Hampshire was a tense place and time. In particular, in the Episcopal Church, where Gene Robinson had just been elected bishop, and folks were reeling. The church in New Hampshire was mostly doing pretty great. We were excited. I had just begun college there, and he had been elected out of the diocese. He'd been living and working there for a long time. He was known, and he was loved. It was the pushback that was coming from across the nation and across the world that brought this tension. Folks were really wrestling with what it would mean to have an openly gay and partnered bishop. What that meant that this diocese had made such a decision. That November, we came together by the plane and the busload and the carload, all to a stadium, a hockey arena at the University of New Hampshire for Gene's ordination as bishop. We came to this hockey arena because there was no church big enough to hold everyone that wanted to come. And when we arrived, we were greeted by lines. First, there was a line of protesters all along the sidewalk on the way into the arena, people holding nasty signs and yelling vile words at everyone going in to pray. And then there was a line of mounted police high up on these huge horses just watching. And then when we'd finally made our way into the arena, we were greeted by really long lines of people waiting to get through the metal detectors. They'd rented metal detectors and set them up in the arena because there had been so many threats of violence. Later on, we learned that Gene had also worn a bulletproof vest under his vestments because, again, there had been so many threats. It was a tense time. There was excitement. There was so much readiness to raise up this person of God who had been called to this church in this time. And then there was also this fear of how it would play out, what would happen, what it would mean for that day, and what it would mean for the church in the coming years. And as we engaged that energy, that range of emotion, I think that a pretty common response was to start thinking about everyone we encountered as us and them, of trying to gauge people as allies or as threats as we sought to understand the way forward. And you could feel the anxiety. I think that Peter is probably feeling a similar kind of fear and tension when we catch up with him in today's gospel. Jesus has just given him and the other disciples an idea of what is to come, warning them about the suffering, the violence, and ultimately the execution that he expects as he turns his face back towards Jerusalem. And Peter, hearing this, yanks Jesus. He pulls him aside out of the group and gives him a piece of his mind. Right? God forbid it, Jesus. This is not how it's supposed to go down. How can we figure out another way? How can we do an end run to bypass what you have just said is coming? And can we really blame Peter? I mean, it's a pretty reasonable thing to to ask. Here is his friend, his beloved teacher. Of course he doesn't want anything bad to happen to him. Of course he doesn't want to lose him as they're just getting going. The problem, though, is that Peter is basing all this on a confused understanding of who Jesus is. We have to back up a little bit to last week to really get into where we are today. Last week, we heard Jesus asking the disciples if they know who other folks say that he is. And they have some ideas, maybe this prophet, maybe that prophet. And then Jesus asks them again, but who do you say that I am? And Peter is ready with them, with this question. He proclaims that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of the living God, and Jesus is thrilled, right? He is so pleased that he gives Peter the proverbial keys of the kingdom. And he tells him that he's the rock, the foundation on which this church will be built. It's all sounding pretty good until we get to the second part today. And Peter keeps running with it, and it becomes clear that he is talking about a different kind of Messiah. Biblical scholar David Lowes explains that it's a pretty common assumption, a working assumption at this point among scholars, that Peter, when he said that Jesus was the Messiah, he was imagining a sort of a warrior king, someone like David who would come with force and with power and overthrow the Roman oppressors. That the people of Israel would be freed, but they would be freed through this power, through force, through taking the power from one group and giving it to another, but not actually changing anything. And this confusion is dangerous. It's dangerous enough that Jesus puts him in his place. Satan, get behind me, Satan, the tempter. Because Peter's vision of this other kind of Messiah, it threatens to pull Jesus away from the whole reason he's here, the whole way that he is seeking to live out in loving all people well. And part of the confusion, I think, also is what that rock is for that he named Peter last week. We hear that he's the rock, the foundation that this church will be built on. And it's usually translated as church, but the word is ecclesia. And while it meant church insofar as it could mean church then, more broadly, beneath that, it means an assembly, the gathering, the bringing together of the whole people. This is the work that Jesus is reaching for. This is why he has his eyes trained on Jerusalem, because he's not willing to stop loving all these different people, to keep offering this love that is so deep and that comes up in so many different places for so many unexpected people, for teaching it to outcasts and authorities alike. He can't do an end run around that with force. He has to keep walking through it. This work of gathering together, of gathering the assembly, I saw it before Jean was ordained as bishop. About 2 weeks or so before his ordination, he came to the campus ministry where I was active as a student. And now we were really excited to host this, you know, quasi-celebrity, right? He's a big deal. We were pretty pumped. And he got there a little bit earlier than we expected, and dinner was not ready yet. And he made his way into the kitchen and started pulling out drawers looking for an apron. which we tried to stop because we wanted to honor him and to serve him, but he threw it on anyways and got to work chopping and mixing and being splattered with spaghetti sauce. And then we sat down, and again, I think most of the students, myself included, we expected to sit at this teacher's feet, so to speak, to share a meal, but to absorb his wisdom in awe. And again, that was not the plan he had. He had come to listen. He had come to knit this group together. It was early enough in the semester that the group was still forming, as it does each fall at a campus ministry. And it was a motley crew, folks who were seeking, folks who were coming from wildly different traditions across the church. Students who really weren't sure about all this, but were ready to be together. And he hosted that. He pulled that body together. And what I learned after, in the weeks after his ordination, was that he was doing this work all across the church. While there was overwhelming support for him throughout the church in New Hampshire, there were also folks who were really struggling, who had voted against him, who didn't know if they could stay. There were churches that were thinking about splitting. There were people who felt like the church had betrayed them. And Gene went, we saw rallies and we saw primetime interviews and all that shiny stuff. But what wasn't as apparent to the wider world was all the visits that he made, going out to these little churches, these little places scattered around in the woods and the mountains, and just sitting down with a few people here, a group there, who absolutely disagreed with him, or who just weren't sure what to make of all this, didn't know the way forward. And he listened. He asked them about who they were, about what inspired their faith, about how they could be church together. I have no doubt that this must have been incredibly difficult for him, right? Because the whole disagreement was about who he was, if he could be their bishop, if they would stay in a church where he was their bishop. And still, he sought them out. If this is not a cross to bear, if this is not a way to follow this Christ who would gather the whole body together, I don't know what is. And friends, as we think about where we were last Sunday and where we are this Sunday, I think we have to consider this call ourselves. Right? Last week, we were here, and service by service, the energy built. And by 11:15, there was standing room only in the back of this church, and the helicopter was circling overhead. And then after the service, a great many of us spilled out into the streets, processing to join other churches, other people of faith, from around Berkeley, and chanting and singing and holding our words that love wins. And that was good, and it was important, it was necessary, I think. We were called to that. And now I think we're called to other work also. The work that Gene did in those podunk little churches that none of us have ever heard of. It wasn't flashy. It wasn't the kind of thing that makes headlines. But it was true. It was the way of life. It was the way of love in reaching out and saying that all of these people are part of the church, part of the assembly. That all of these people are necessary, that we need each other. And so taking the time to sit down together, This is the call that I hear for us, that we are to reach out to those family members that we don't understand at all. Or to another All Soulsian, maybe, who voted differently from us. Or to neighbors that we haven't met yet, but that we need to know. What if this were our cross? What if this was our call for how we need to build up this body, not just in this church, but as the people, together, belonging to each other? Jesus is revealed in a way that Peter starts to grasp, and that we need to reach for even more as we look for this Messiah, not one of force, but one of absolutely unwavering commitment to this way of love. To reach one for another, looking for that Christ. This work of the ecclesia, the assembly, the gathering together is messy. And it's dangerous. It is inherently risky. And this is the church we are called to be.